My name is Bindi Bitterman, and I am a very unexpected author of Skiddly Diddly Scat.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is a very special episode of Finding Favorites because it is my first ever live, in front of a live audience, podcast recording. This weekend, I co-chaired the inaugural Chicago Jewish Book Festival with Amy Guth at our Synagogue Emmanuel Congregation in Edgewater in Chicago. As part of that, I interviewed a fellow congregant, Bindi Bitterman. She's 92 years old and recently published her very first book, a children's book called Skiddly Skiddly Scat. So this episode has first, she read the book. She did a story time and she talks about how the book came to be. And then later in the afternoon, I interviewed her with an audience. And so this is that interview. Like I said, Bindi is 92 years old. She's been a member of our congregation for many years, over 50. And this is just a delightful conversation. Now, with it being my very first live show, I didn't have the mic set up properly for audience questions. So I just kind of cut where people in the audience were asking questions instead of trying to re-record what they were asked. I wasn't really sure how to handle that, but some of Bindi's answers are so good that I didn't want to cut her answers even when you can't hear the questions. So please enjoy this interview with Bindi Bitterman. We talk about a lot of different things, and it kicks off with her reading her children's book, which is all in limericks. That part is definitely kid friendly. The whole episode is pretty wholesome. And then I am off to Israel on Wednesday, so I think you'll probably not hear from me again until August. Wear your mask, wash your hands, and keep enjoying your favorite things.
Well, I guess we should get started because it doesn't look like anybody else is going to be coming. My name is Bindi Bitterman, and I am a very unexpected author of Skiddly Diddly Scat. And I'll tell you how this came about. From little on, I have written verse all my life, except for the 50 years that I was married. And I had four kids, and I had an antique shop, and I never had time to write. But before that, I never wrote serious poetry, just P-O-M-E-S, which are just nonsense verse. And then, after my husband died, I moved to the Admiral the Lake, and somebody put me in touch with a guy who lived elsewhere, and we went out on a date, and we were sitting across the dinner table, and he leaned over, and he said, "I write limericks." And I thought, what is the chance of meeting a man who writes limericks? Because although I hadn't written limericks, as I said, I wrote verse. Well, he and I sort of dated for about 6 months, and every night we would email each other a limerick, just thanking us, or just general principles. Okay. I never set about to write a book, but one day I'm sitting at my computer, and the phrase skiddly diddly scat just came into my head, and I thought, oh, that's a good thing kids would say, skiddly diddly scat. They would like that. They would have fun with that. So little by little, I started concocting this story, which I will now read to you, whether you want me to or not. Skiddly diddly scat, frowned at my diddly scat. Mike didn't like that. It's my space. I won't let you get up in my face. You're my enemy, my foe. You will just have to go. You will not just take over my place. Meyer bared his front teeth and his claws. he would do what he liked just because. Cats don't even think twice. They just always eat mice. Everyone knows all those natural laws. But skiddly diddly skeen. Mike was small, but he really was mean. He smiled and he beckoned, but at the very last second, he pushed Meyer into a machine. Now, some people don't care for mice, but before Michael, the mouse, could think twice, someone spied him, cried, "Eek!" tossed him in with a shriek, and pushed start on that washing device. Can you picture Meyer the cat and Mouse Michael tumbling through every wash machine cycle? The reason I picked those names was because Michael rhymed with cycle and Meyer rhymed with dryer. Skiddly diddly scat. The washer stopped, and just like that, Mike the mouse yelled, "Meow!" The cat, Meyer, squeaked. "How in the world did you ever do that?" He must have been one scaredy cat. Skiddly diddly scat. Cause usually, you know, it's a cat that meows in the house, hearing squeaks from a mouse. So their time in the washer changed that. Their tails were reversed, but now much the worst. The mouse has the tail of the cat. And of course, the cat has the tail of the mouse. Tails and tails got unhitched and they wound up all switched. What do you, reader dear, think of that? But that's not the end of this tale. Keep reading to learn because they'll multiply their dilemma with another problema, skiddly diddly scale. Watch Meyer the cat, if you please. Can you guess what's the next thing he sees? Well, we know when a mouse is alone in a house, his main hunt will be focused on
cheese.
And what do you think that a cat would drink if he wants to do that? He'd go to a basin and put his whole face in like some thirsty kitty cat acrobat. But in this particular text, well, I bet you can guess what came next. Meyer ate Michael's cheese. Didn't even say please. And boy, little Mousy was vexed. But before Mike could fight like he ought to, he realized he wanted some water. And the spigot which beckoned was there, so he reckoned he'd drink, though he started to totter. My favorite illustration. Oh, and remind me to tell you how I found the illustrator. Then both of them started to chase each other all over the place. They wanted to backtrack and get their old selves back and be in their used-to-be space. Meyer yearned for his own fluffy tail and to always meow without fail. He wanted to drink from the drops in the sink, skiddly diddly scale. Michael longed for some cheese as he wanted his tail to be thin as a rail. They both wanted this tale to end good. Now, skiddly diddly scat, if you were the mouse or the cat and you found things were changing, how would you start arranging to get back where you wished you were at? The problem was they didn't know how it happened to them. Therefore, so, how to reach a conclusion and end the confusion seemed hopeless until, here's the answer they suddenly got. We're a mouse and a cat, but so what? We both eat and we drink, we both poop, we both think, so we have things in common, a lot. Now, we're wet and we both need to dry. So right now, let's the both of us try to plop into a dryer. And Michael and Meyer went into a dryer nearby. Well, a customer standing around watched these odd, soggy creatures and frowned. He thought, I don't want to fry them, but at least I can dry them. Mike and Meyer made nary a sound. And when they came out, things were splendid. All the switches and glitches had mended. With smiles on their faces and things in right places, cat and mouse were as nature intended. One more page. At that point, they said, fiddle-faddle, there's no reason for us to do battle, 'cause they realized how they weren't enemies now, and let skiddly-diddly skedaddle. That's it. I have to tell you how I found the illustrator. My late husband was an artist, Richard Bitterman. I think maybe some of you have heard of him. And we used to travel. We did sort of this art circuit in the Jewish community. We would go to synagogues all over the country and do shows and stuff. And in San Francisco, there was this artist named Rich Sigberman who did fine art, only fine art. Well, now I have to... If I hadn't wrecked my computer, I would never have found him. I spilled coffee in my computer, and I lost everything. And I took it to Evanston. There was a place in Evanston that can retrieve what you lose. And they did, and it went back like 15 years ago. I mean, everything I ever had on the computer came back. And lo and behold, 9 years ago, we had gotten a message from Rich Sigberman saying that in addition to doing fine art, he was doing children's book illustration. If I had not spilled coffee in my computer, I would never have found him. And of course, this never really set out to be a book in the first place. I mean, I was just fooling around at the computer, and little by little it came together. And I took a class at the Newberry Library. And this wonderful woman, whose name I am, Esther Hershenhorn, maybe some of you know her, she was the teacher. And what I had was about maybe a third or a quarter of this. And over the course of her class, she kept urging us to do more and more and more. And when I finally finished it, she said, "Bindi, you have a book there." And she said, see if you can get an agent, which is what you need to get a book published. Well, on the computer, there are thousands and thousands of agents. And a lot of them do children's verse books, but I could not find one who would do limericks. Not a one. So the only answer was to self-publish it, which means very few people will see it, you know, because self-publishing only gets you, and I'm not young enough to, and I also found out, actually, that I don't even want stores to sell it. I'm not sure what I do, and I don't do Amazon. Oh, you have to know this about Amazon. I don't do Amazon because they undercut the prices of books, and I won't encourage that, so I won't do Amazon. So the sales of this book has been very limited, but it's okay because I'm happy with it. I'm not doing it for the money, and I just like that some people like to hear it, and it's fun.
Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. Today is my very first live show with a live audience. That's very exciting. I'm 150 episodes into my podcast. I've been doing it. This is... The Finding Favorites podcast was my COVID hobby. It was a way for me to talk to new people every week about something other than COVID. And I have found in that a penchant for talking to authors. So every author this afternoon after we finish talking has been a guest on my podcast. So the idea behind the podcast is I talk to people, like I said, about their favorite things.
and I am so excited. Today we are at the inaugural Chicago Jewish Book Festival, and I am joined by author and longtime Emmanuel member, Bindi Bitterman. Bindi is the author of Skiddly Diddly Scat, a children's book made of limericks. We had a reading this morning, but Bindi has so many stories beyond this, and I was just like, please stay and let me talk to you.
Okay.
So, Bindi, how are you doing today?
Well, this is the first time I've ever had a day like this, so every couple of minutes is a new involvement and a new discovery and a new thing, and of course I'm having the time of my life.
Outstanding.
Plus a lot of good food.
Yeah. Well, if there's something we like to do in the Jewish community, it's eat. We have a lot of good desserts for tonight and good drinks tonight. If I know you've got a friend coming.
Right.
So we might sneak in and get you some desserts to take with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So Bindi, for folks who weren't with us this morning, tell us a little bit about how Skiddly Diddly Scat came to happen. Now, specifically, Liz Cohen said to me, get her to tell the story about the boyfriend who wrote limericks.
Oh, well, that's part of it. If any of you were here this morning, you're going to hear the same thing all over again. I have written verse all my life. I never wrote serious poetry, nor did I write limericks, but I have written verses and rhymes all my life, except, interestingly enough, for the 50 years that I was married, because I was raising four kids and I had an antique shop, and I just never had a case. Well, sometimes with maybe presents at holiday time, I'd write a little something, but I never did. And then, after my husband died, I moved into the Admiral, which I think most of you know is all for seniors. And somebody, I sort of went on a blind date, somebody who didn't live at the Admiral, and we were sitting at dinner, and he leaned across the table, and he said to me, I write limericks. And I just about fainted, because who in the world would think of a guy who wrote limericks being fixed up with me? And it turned out that the limericks he wrote were not the kind that you would ever read. There is an organization called the Society of the Fifth Line. And ladies, if you ever meet anyone who belongs to it, run.
So are these, Bindi, are these dirty limericks?
They're dirty and they're misogynistic. And they're, they're just not the kind that I write.
Fair.
Or read.
Yeah.
But anyway, that night, I wrote him a thank you note on the computer in limerick form. And he wrote back to me. And for 6 months, we limericked back and forth on the computer daily, really. And by that time, I was a confirmed limerick writer. So, actually, Skiddly Diddly Scat was a total accident. I sit at my computer a lot, and I just fool around. And I was just sitting there one day, and the phrase Skiddly Diddly Scat came into my mind, and I thought, oh, that's a great phrase for kids. Kids would love to say that, Skiddly Diddly Scat. And it's a... And of course, if you've read it or if you know anything, it's about a cat, which rhymes with scat, and a mouse, Michael is one of them, and it rhymes with cycle, so that's why it's in a laundromat. And I mean, that's how this whole thing came about. I found a word that rhymed, and I made it fit. And it took about three, I never set out to write a book, really. I was taking a class at the Newberry Library with a woman named Esther Hirshenhorn, and I think it was called Writing for Children or something. And I was just potchking around with this thing. And she said to me at one point, Bindi, I think you've got a book with a little, just a little more work on it. That could be a book. So I made it a book. You can't publish a book without an agent. And there are thousands, maybe millions of agents on the computer. But I couldn't find one who would deal with limericks. Not one. So I self-published it, which effectively really limits your exposure. But it's okay, because I'm 92 now, so I was like 89 at the time, and you know, I didn't need the money, and I didn't do it for anything except, you know, I had the fun of doing it in the first place, and that was really the only reason I was doing it. So, can I answer any questions or anything? I mean,
well, I have some questions for you.
Okay.
So one is, when we invited you to come to the Chicago Jewish Book Festival, you said, Leah.
It isn't Jewish.
It's not a Jewish book.
There's nothing Jewish about it.
But you're a Jewish author.
Well, that's true.
Can I ask you how you became a member of Emmanuel?
Oh, I married into it.
You married into Emmanuel.
When I married a man who had three children. And so, I mean, even though he was divorced, he had gotten custody of his three children, and they all belonged here. So the Bitterman name has been here for a very long time, and I don't know how many of you know, but there's a lot. There's some of the mezuzahs around which my husband made. My husband was an artist. He made jewelry, and he made Judaica. And there's a wonderful Hanukkah menorah in the art display thing. You can't tell, but if you take it out, it's a grogger. I said menorah. I don't mean it. It's a Purim grogger is what it is. When you get to be 92, you sort of, you know. It's a Purim grogger, and it goes around and around and around. It's all these little kids holding hands with flags, and they make this noise. The flags hit the it's a wonderful piece. And it's in the art display cabinet over there.
And there's the Torah podium too, right? Didn't he design that?
Yes, he did. It's the decorative.
Right. So we inherited you, and we've been lucky, and you've been a member ever since.
Yes, that's right.
What is your favorite Jewish holiday?
That's a good question. Probably Hanukkah. I think I'm not a food person. I mean, I eat a lot, but I don't cook. And I don't entertain. That is my worst failing. I don't entertain. I never did. I think it's some kind of a, I don't know. It's a thing. I just really do not entertain. So Passover is an entertaining thing.
Mm-hmm.
People come over, so that isn't it. I suppose Hanukkah, Purim too, because you know I'm really silly, and you can be silly. You can be silly on Purim. I don't know. This is interesting, and it has nothing to do with anything. But at 82, I find I would like the company of a man, and not for sex and not for anything, except I think it would be nice to have a man. I don't know why I'm telling you all this. It's none of your business.
But keep coming. We all want to know, Bindi.
but I've just sort of been thinking about that because, whatever.
Yeah. So one of the fantastic things about Bindi is when you Google her, there are so many articles. And one of them that I read was about your collection of pop-up greeting cards.
Thank you. Now, this is really interesting. Can you all see this?
Okay. Or maybe, Liz, if you do the book.
Okay. My husband loved antique paper, and we used to go antiquing in New England every summer. And he started finding this three-dimensional stuff that was really weird because it would have something Jewish about it, like there'd be a Moses in front, or there'd be a Star of David on the bottom, which turns out to be an interesting story. But there were always hearts and flowers, and we knew that Jewish New Year cards were not supposed to have hearts and flowers. So he started buying up all of these, and we started researching them. And actually, he died before we started researching him, but a friend of mine who has also now died, she wasn't even Jewish, and she was fascinated by this. We have in my apartment, I have a frame thing of all of these in three-dimensional like that. Because Jewish New Year cards did not have hearts and flowers, but these all were clearly Jewish New Year cards. And then sometimes you would see and you could feel that they had been pasted over. And a couple of them, because we find these and they'd be really old, and you could turn up the bottom, and underneath it there would be hearts, like Happy Valentine's Day, and somebody would have pasted it over and said Happy New Year in English and in Hebrew. And it became fascinating. And I have, if you ever come to my apartment, I have a framed thing. I have two frames, actually, and it has these things. And I started writing this book, The Mystery of the Jewish New Year Valentines, with this editor friend of mine who died. But we couldn't get enough to really make a book out of it. And we also had a kind of a crisis. We had never seen postcards that had both the heart and the Jewish New Year thing on it. And I found three. Somebody found them online. And I ordered them, and they were very expensive. I mean, like over $100.
Wow.
And they got lost in the mail. So I never got them.
Oh, no.
And that seemed like that was such a peculiar thing to happen that I thought, you know what, maybe I'm not supposed to be writing this in the first place. Because that just, you know. So this is the only, I had about, this book, because of this little skinny thing cost $80, cost me $80 to publish. And it would have been a fortune if we'd ever been able to make it into a book. But and that's the only copy I have now. We had quite a few, and people, you know, one way or another, they got away. But it's a fascinating thing, and if any of you, you're all welcome to come to my apartment and see what I have. Yeah.
So I'm curious about the pop-up cards. Was the mystery that you were solving, was that Jewish people were buying Valentine's Day cards and then like making them more Jewish and then sending them out for Rosh Hashanah?
You know, this has been so long since I researched this that I've almost forgotten the answer to it, and I forgot to study before.
Oh, it's okay.
There were a few Jewish publishing houses in America, and there was one, I can't remember the name of it, and they started making Jewish New Year cards and using this stock as the basis.
Okay.
And they were the ones who covered over the non-Jewish things, mm-hmm, with their Jewish signs and stuff. And I think it was called the Hebrew Publishing Company, come to think of it. And I think it was in New York. It was probably in New York City. I really don't remember.
So the Hebrew, the well, it's okay. Here's the thing. The thing about finding favorites is we're talking to people about what they love, and not I'm not interviewing you as like the ultimate expert. Okay. So it's okay. But it sounds like this company was, they would go out and buy up the stock. Like this company, Hebrew Publishing, they would go buy the leftover Valentine's Day cards, bring them in-house, make them Jewish, and then sell them, resell them.
Exactly.
I love it.
That's exactly what happened.
It's good recycling.
Yes. And
what other questions, as Bendy said earlier, what do people have questions for Bendy? No. You can ask her about the company she'd like to keep. What are you looking, you know? Liz?
Ruthie? So that was kind of interesting. I wrote a story because for a long time she wouldn't recognize me or, you know, say when she was just a child. And then one day, she finally said, "Goodbye, Grandma Bindi." And of course I started. Next question. Liz? Oh, that's my husband. That's not me. Oh, no, you don't do it. You collect it if you'll, yeah. I bet none of you have ever heard of nautical embroideries, have you?
Nautical.
Oops. Nautical embroideries can come in all kinds of ways and sizes. As I said, my husband was a collector. He was a pack rat. That's why I had an antique shop. I didn't know anything about antiques.
But it was a way to clean house. He would build a collection and then you would sell it.
You're going to have an antique shop so we could go buy antiques is what it was and sell them. So that's who he did. And one day we saw this huge, and my husband liked American flags. Anything with an American flag he liked. So one day we're in an antique shop and there's this really like, I don't know, 5 foot tall thing with a ship and American flags and a photograph of the sailor on the ship and a really beautiful thing, all embroidered and everything. And he had never seen anything like it. And we bought it and the dealer told us that it was a genre called a nautical embroidery, and some of them are only like this big, and some of them are this big, and some of them we did see one once that was like $1,000 or something, but most of them, I mean, the ones we bought were always very modestly priced. And I forgot why I'm telling you. Well, they commemorate American ship, the whole shipping, not industry, the Navy, yeah, and all the various ships and the various tours that they took and all this kind of thing. And then we started finding them that were much older. And so I have a small collection of, which is in the hall outside my apartment, of ships with, they all had to have flags on them. And the really good ones have the admiral or whoever is manning the ship. A picture of the ship is a picture, and a picture of the sailor who bought the, or who was responsible for the nautical embroidery in the first place. You know, there's so much that most of us don't know exists in the world. The more you can be exposed to, it's so interesting. Mm-hmm. You don't even know what you're missing.
Yeah. Are there other collections in your apartment?
Well, now I only have a little small apartment, so I don't have very many. And I was never the collector. It was always my husband.
Yeah.
I was the appreciator. Okay. But I was not the collector.
What are some of the items that you have kept?
Of his or of
things
ours?
That of yours, yeah.
Well, okay, one of my favorite things, because, you know, he was an artist, so we did shows. And one of my favorite things is a depiction. Well, oh, no, first, or I have to go back a little bit. We were doing a show, he was doing a show in Washington, D.C. It was the second, it was after the State of Israel had been formed. They had the first showing, it was, what do they call it? It was post-Holocaust or something. It's Holocaust Survivors. It was an art show for Holocaust survivors. They had had the first one in Israel, and the second one was in Washington, D.C. And my husband had his booth. He wasn't a Holocaust survivor, but you didn't have to be one to be one of the exhibitors. And I was walking around, and I saw this wonderful granite sculpture about this high. Blank faces, a father and a mother and a child. Black and white striped granite, like the prisoners, like the concentration camp people. And I asked the man how much it was, and he told me, and it was way beyond anything I was prepared to buy. He said, but I'm not going to sell this piece. It's a maquette, which means a model. I'm waiting to get a commission from some city or whatever to do a life-size one. These are survivors. This is, you know, it's called We Are the Living. And they're Holocaust survivors. And he said, when I get the commission, I am going to sell this maquette. And I said, well, I couldn't afford to buy it right now anyway. But if you will take my information and if you will let me know when it's available, I will save my money and I will buy it. And that happened.
Wow.
And so I have it now in my apartment. And above it, there's an artist named Elsa Wax who lives in Philadelphia, W-A-C-H-S. And she does textiles. She does chuppahs. Is it hoopoat? Whatever. She does chuppahs and she does all kinds of usually family-related textiles. But when you're doing a show, you have to have something that you can sell for a modest price because you can't just sell $1,000 pieces at a show because there aren't that many people walking around ready to buy $1,000. So you have to have something that costs maybe $100 or less or a little bit more. And so for that, she made a, the only actual textile in it, it's an image of a striped shirt in hand coming up and there's a flower and Am Yisrael Chai, so it's Israel Lives. And I have that in my apartment over this marble statue of the concentration camp things. And I really like that. Very, very fond of that. Did that answer your question?
Yes. Yes, very much so. Now, I did, last night I took my phone on the Bima, and now I did not. So, Sarah Beth, I wanted to do a time check. No, that was a wonderful answer. Thank you. Were you, so I, you mentioned that you and your husband did artists, you would do artists, you would travel for art shows. Was there a favorite, a city that was your favorite place to, oh, you're like, oh, it's San Francisco. I'm so excited.
Well, we used to go up to, where was the Concord? What was the, not the Berkshires, it was, what? The Catskills, yes. And that was interesting because when we first started going, they were still doing the Jewish things. They don't, I think the Catskills is now dead as far as that goes. But at the time, it was all Jewish, and it was something that New Yorkers knew all about, but Chicagoans didn't know anything about it at all. So that was a very, the restaurant served, well, you could have 8 entrees. You could have as much as you wanted to eat. It was fascinating. And I had never been exposed to anything like that in my life. Now I'm talking about like 1980, 1990, stuff like that. So it was a long time ago.
So you would go to the Catskills and you would get, how you said you love to eat, you don't love to host. So what were some of your what were some of the entrees? Do you remember any in particular?
You can get one of that, one of that, one of that.
Yeah.
And I think you only paid one, I think it was like one price for as much as you wanted or something. I mean, I'm sure, otherwise I wouldn't have been eating all that stuff. So, and it was a lovely setting. And it was just so foreign to me. And, you know, it was a very nice experience. And we met some lovely people. And yeah, that was really nice. In fact, there's a piece in the sanctuary that the person that I'm talking about, she, I know her. I've forgotten the name. I'm 92 years old. Give me a break. I forget. And actually, interestingly, from 91 to 92 has been a noticeable shift for me.
Yeah?
Yeah. Really, it was almost like, it was so precipitous, I forget a lot more than I used to. I don't like it, but I can't do anything about it. So, but I can still write. This whole limerick thing is so interesting. I can sit at my computer and I can write a limerick like that. I mean, it just comes out of me. I would never have imagined that could happen. I'm so grateful for it because it's really all I can do now. I can write prose too. I do. I write memoirs. I like to write. So if any of you ever want a limerick written, just let me know.
We'll go Devorah and then David.
But not since I'm 92. 92 really, I mean really, this is sad. I've stopped not caring, but not feeling motivated enough to do something like I used to. I used to be much more motivated to do things, and I'm not. And I miss that in myself, but not enough to change.
And David,
Oh God, that was awful. Inspired me never to do it again. When I was a kid, I loved to canoe. And I thought, well, maybe it's sort of like canoeing. But the secret to canoeing is to be in the stern. Because if you're in the bow, it's just work. But if you're in the stern, you get to steer the canoe, and that makes all the difference in the world. So I went to this kayaking thing, and I thought, oh, well, I'll sit in the stern, and I'll kayak, and it'll be like in a canoe. First of all, nowadays, they put you in a life jacket, which already takes all the fun out of it. And then, you know, and you don't get to say where you're going to be or anything. And I didn't like that at all. No, it didn't inspire anything. Maybe I was with Sarah. Was I with you, Sarah? Yes. And we. And I remember. I came out of it and I was starving. Remember that? And her son had left a cookie on the floor of her car. And it was wrapped up. It wasn't eaten. It was fresh. And I devoured that cookie.
Michael, I'll let you, Essa, bring us home.
Oh, that was so much fun. Oh, God, that was just great. Yeah, I like to go to the women's retreat. I didn't go last year because it's starting. I walk fine, but I can't walk far. Although now I've started using a cane if I'm going to walk far. And the only reason I really didn't go to the women's retreat was that you have to walk from the lodge, from where you're staying to where you eat. But anyway, the last time I was there, oh God, that was so much. Who among you were there?
I know Joe was there. She couldn't be here today, but Joe McCauley tells the story all the time. She loves sledding with you. It was legendary.
We don't always have snow. There isn't always snow. But that winter, they had snow. And all the young women were going sledding. And I I had to be a part of that. So I sledded. And they wouldn't let me go down alone. They made sure that I was with somebody.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah.
I don't like life as... What? I'm having such a good time.
I'm gonna ask you one more question, and then we'll close the podcast and we'll move to our next interview. But Bindi, I'm half your age. I'm 46. What advice do you have for me? What do you know at 92 that you wish you'd known at 46?
Take advantage of every new experience that you possibly can. If somebody says, do you want to do this? Say yes. That's about my, yeah. And don't be afraid of meeting new people, because new people of either sex or all sexes, because now I noticed in the boys' room there's a sign that says something about indeterminate or whatever. Is there one in the girls' room too? Yeah, I think that's great. So don't be afraid of anything, and but be sensible about it, but don't be afraid.
Outstanding. Well, you can follow Finding Favorites on Instagram and Twitter, Finding Faves Pod. You can follow me. I'm at Chicago Leah on Twitter and TikTok, Shy Leah on Instagram. Bindi, can people find you on the internet, or should they find us through the congregation?
I have a website that's called bindisverses.com, all one word.
She is on email all the time. She replies very quickly. So wear your mask, wash your hands, get your COVID boosters, and keep enjoying your favorite things. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.